Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent, documentary, and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Much Ado About Dying begins when filmmaker Simon Chambers receives a call from his elderly gay uncle, David Newlin Gale, with the message, "I think I may be dying." Simon takes it as a summons. As it turns out, eccentric Uncle David, a retired actor living alone in a clustered, mouse-infested London house, is being dramatic, sort of. The film again is called Much Ado About Dying, and we're joined today by the director, cinematographer, producer, Simon Chambers. Simon, welcome to Film School Radio.
Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, and thank you for being here. Congratulations on the film. It is the kind of film that I can imagine catching on with audiences. It just has that feel to it. It's a heartwarming story in so many ways, even though we're in the midst of the last days of David. And also doing well with the critics. I think it's close to 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So congratulations on all of that. But you get the phone call that we just described from him. Obviously, you went there to see what was going on, if you could help. At what point during either the conversation with him or in the days following in which you were there watching him, seeing how he was doing, did this spark of creativity hit you that maybe David's an interesting man, maybe there's something in his story that's universal, maybe there's something about this that's worth documenting?
Well, it's a very funny question, Mike, but the answer is never. I never thought that because what happened is my uncle, he's an actor. He wasn't a famous actor, but he was a very serious actor and he loved Shakespeare. And he taught in a theatre school in London and had very many successful students who all loved him. He was a wacky sort of, he's the one that would stay behind till 10 o'clock at night with the students, helping them to work on their play that they were going to take up to the Edinburgh Fringe, and they'd all end up sleeping in a scout hut on the edge of town and having to cycle in. You know, he loved theatre, but he also loved the kind of low end. You know, he loved encouraging young people to do it, as well as going to all the stuff in the West End. And as many of your listeners will know, actors never feel more alive than when they're actually performing, either on a stage or on a screen. You know, they become alive. And what happened was, I was living in India, and my Uncle David, as you've already said, he keeps saying, "You've got to come back. You've got to come back. I need you. I need you. You're no good over there in India." And I said to this friend, "Look, go and keep an eye on him. Is he okay?" And they said, "Yes, I think you better come back." And the reason they said that was not because he was dying, but it was actually because he'd got himself into a bit of a state about all sorts of things, money, the house, you know, everything was getting more and more difficult. He couldn't get the doctors to come and visit and so on. So I came back, but to be honest, I was a little bit annoyed with him that he dragged me all this way, saying that he was dying and that he was okay and everything. And anyway, we had this very cantankerous relationship for a long time. And I think a lot of carers, family carers, will identify with what I experience, which is that your son or your nephew or your daughter, they are in a way going to get the worst, you know, like they take you for granted and they think, "You've got me the wrong honey again. I asked for this set honey and you ended up getting the runny honey. You know I don't like the runny honey," that kind of thing. Whereas the visitors that come in from outside the family, you know, they can do no wrong. And so all they have to do is turn up with something they just bought from the store around the corner. And then it's, "Oh, aren't they marvelous? What lovely. They're so thoughtful and so caring." So David and I had this cantankerous relationship with each other, which only a family member can have. You know, you love each other and you know you love each other and you know you're going to be there for each other. But at the same time, the flip side of you kind of hate each other at times as well. That's part of the love. So because we didn't get on well, he kept saying, "Oh, why don't you bring your camera? You're a documentary filmmaker. What's your problem? You know, You're missing opportunity here, Simon. You really need to bring your camera. I've got a lot to say. And I thought, oh, who wants to watch a movie about an old man who's living in this crumbling old squalid house? And yes, it's kind of colorful. It was a bit like a sort of, people said, a documentary version of the film With Nail and I. I don't know if you remember that.
But, yes, I do. Yes.
It has similarities. And I thought, nobody really wants to see it because there's no story. There's nothing happening. There's no drama here. And so I brought the camera. And you know what? It was a lot better when I brought the camera because he loved the camera and he was kind of performing a lot of the time. And he was in a better mood and he wouldn't say all those sort of things that annoyed me or got under my skin when the camera was on. And so I thought, this is great. I'm just going to keep filming. So I had all this footage, you know, I don't know, 10, 20 hours of footage that I never, ever dreamt of turning into a film because there was, like I said, no drama, nothing happening. And then it was one day when I'd gone away for the weekend, I was just driving back to London and I got a call and it was the police. They said, listen, is this your uncle? You better get back to London quickly. Because there's been a big problem and we need you here to try and sort it out. And so that's when, you know, part of me is going, oh no, this is dreadful. But there's also the writer, Graham Greene. He says, within every writer, there's a shard of glass. And, you know, my shard of glass as a documentary filmmaker went, oh, finally, now we've got some drama here. And so actually that's when I thought, oh, I have to make this into a film. And it was also because of some of these things that happened, which I'm not going to spoil for the audience if they do come to see the film. I thought these things need talking about, you know, in our world, because everybody seems to know somebody that's ended up having to look after an elderly relative or a disabled relative. And it's not a walk in the park. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you think you've sorted everything out like I did. I thought, oh, great, I've sorted it out. I'll go off for a little weekend away. And then this terrible thing happened. And it's always like that. You can never know what's going to happen. Granny's going to slip on the stairs or whatever. And then it's off to hospital. And then suddenly your life is changed for months. And I thought, nobody's made a film about this that I'm aware of. So that's what I wanted to do. Plus, David was being so entertaining and funny at the same time as all these terrible things that were happening to him that I felt this is incredibly entertaining. And in a way, any of the filmmakers that are listening to this will know what I'm saying when, in a way, what our kind of, if we were lying on the therapy couch and we were asked, what is it we really want to do? As filmmakers, what we really want to do is we want to entertain people. We want to move them and make them laugh and cry and think about things in a way they've never thought about them before. And in a way, that's what I think this film does. And, you know, having shown it now at about 25 different festivals, that's what people are saying. You know, it's deeply moving, it's achingly funny and very sad as well at the same time. So it kind of ticks all the boxes for me.
And me as well. I can tell you that having gone through some version of this with my own parents, it is that at some point in this process, you have to make a decision to let go. You have to understand that your life has become something that you're almost not in charge of to any real degree if you choose to do what you did. If you choose the path that you took here, you have to come to an understanding that this is what you don't know what you're in for. And accepting that makes it easier, not easy, but makes it easier. And I think that's what comes across for me watching the film is we're all going to die. And we hope that we have somebody with us near the end or at the end who cares enough about us to do what you did. And That for me is, and it really, and I think that's what's striking a chord with people.
I think that's right. And I think it's a taboo. We're not talking about it. You know, we're not talking about this experience that we're all, the only one experience that we know we're all inevitably going to go through at some point. And we're not talking about being carers, and it's a very invisible, undervalued job that's not paid. I mean, I think you're right. But what I learned from David, really, because it's not all doom and gloom.
No.
Is that you can get an incredible payback from caring for somebody. And what I got, as you've said, David was an incredibly fascinating character, a lot of, you know, very incredibly good fun. And even when these quite terrible things happen, he's incredibly philosophical about them. And and I think a lot of that's led by the fact that he was an actor. Acting is a lot about play and playing and playing other characters and seeing yourself as a character. And he saw himself as a character in his life, which I found fascinating. And so there are moments in the film when there's an obvious parallel between Shakespeare's King Lear and David's own personal life. And King Lear is about getting old, losing your marbles, you know, trying to set right all the things that need setting right before you go. So David kept on breaking into King Lear. He's in hospital at one stage and he just breaks into, you know, he's almost taken all his clothes off. And then he sort of goes, "What is man? Nothing but a bare-forked animal." And he's doing that the whole time. The nurses and the doctors think, this guy, you know, okay, calm down, get back into the bed. And then he's doing that all the time. And there's a moment when he's aware that he's lost a lot of the things in his life that he had before. He's looking in the mirror and he's being Prospero from The Tempest and saying, "I'm liberated, I'm free from all the money and the objects that I used to think were so important." And so the fact that he lives his life almost looking at it at the same time as he lives it, looking at it from the outside as a character.
Yeah.
There's another moment when he says, "No, this is act two, scene three of his life." Actually helps him to deal with all the suffering, the things that we all have to deal with. Because, and that's one of the things that I've learned as his nephew and carer, but also as a filmmaker, studying all the rushes and looking at them and trying to figure out how you put all this together and tell a story. And it's made me feel a lot better about my own life and about the things in my life where I think, oh, you know, things aren't going well. And you think, if you see it as a story, if you see it as a drama in a way, you know, it's not going to carry on like this. You know, it'll get, things will change, they'll get better. And then you look at someone like David, who by the end of the film, you know, we don't actually see him breathe his last breath, but we're very aware that he's dying. And he's incredibly philosophical about it all. And you realize all these things that we worry about, the anxieties we have in our day-to-day lives, are such small little things compared to this big thing of our mortality.
I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Simon Chambers. He is the director, producer, cinematographer. What else? What other hats? Did you edit this as well?
I did.
You did.
To be honest, Mike, this was a homemade film.
That's what I got from the credits, was it looked like it was you.
Well, we had to make up a few credits because there weren't really enough people that worked on it.
Yeah.
But basically, I did everything. I had the help of a wonderful editor for 8 weeks, and she did an amazing job, a woman called Claire Ferguson. And you know, she, because when it's a personal film like this and you know each other so well and it's about you, it's about me, it's very difficult to get the distance from it and to know what's actually interesting and what isn't interesting. And it's very difficult to batch it into a story, you know, a story with a beginning and a middle and an end, and how to play out all the different parts of the story so that it's going to really capture an audience. And so she was fabulous at that. But then after the 8 weeks, I was on my own. And it was really sitting in the at a table in the bedroom, you know, working on the laptop. So it was pretty much a homemade production without any funding or anything. And so it's incredible to think that you can still do that.
Well, I mean, the art of filmmaking is it at the end of the day, as a director, as the writer, it is in many ways in your head, and then it becomes something that's of the world. And yeah, this is it's been deeply affecting. Again, I've heard from, you know, people, read about people who come away from the film deeply moved. And I didn't finish. Let me finish the last part of what I was saying, which is we're speaking with Simon Chambers. The film is called Much Ado About Dying, and it will be playing here in Los Angeles at the Lemley Monica Film Center on the 22nd.
And I'm coming on my own to LA, and I'll be there doing the Q&As on, I think, Friday and Saturday. We've got a fabulous Q&A set up at the Lemley Monica. So I'm very excited about that. I can't wait. It's always fantastic for me meeting the audiences, because there are always lots of people who want to have a talk about their own experience of being a carer and, or, you know, the problems and everything. And because there's hardly ever any opportunity to talk about these things.
Yeah.
So it'd be great to talk about that, but also be great to talk to filmmakers, you know, people involved in the industry, you know, who in a way, this is quite a sort of unusual model for making a film where you don't have any money whatsoever to fund the film, but you manage to get it out there and get it shown around the world.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a sort of an film and the way that you went about it that it reminds me of. It's not exactly the same, but in some ways Tarnation is a good, I think, point of reference. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yes, I remember when that came out, and it was quite sort of surprising, wasn't it? Because it seemed to come out of nowhere, and it took off, and it had a
And
great
he did it all on it, and that was the big thing, was he did it on his Apple laptop, basically. Everything was shot and edited. He did everything, very much like what, and a very personal story about him and his mother. And so this, in some ways, for me, a reference would be Tarnation. And it was quite a stir, because not only the way he went about making it, as you did, but the impression it left on people.
I think you're right, Mike. And I think really a lot of the personal, the intimacy that you feel in Tarnation is something that people have said about this film as well. And I'm so pleased about that, because part of me worried about, you know, it's me on a camera. It's not an expensive camera. It's just a camera that was really a hand-me-down. You know, there's no sort of high production values at all. And yet it really works, you know, emotionally. And I think that's because of the story, but it's also mostly because of David, Uncle David, and the person that he was.
Having watched the movie, I'm sorry I never got to meet your uncle. I feel really kind of, not deprived is not exactly the right word, but I'm sorry I never got a chance to spend time with him. But I feel like I did spend time with him after watching the movie.
Well, I think a lot of people have said that. And they've also said, you know, the fact that he was an actor and a performer, and that was the most important thing in his life. He would have been absolutely thrilled and delighted at this film, because it's his big moment.
It's a one-man show in some ways. It really is. This is the one-man act on Broadway that I'm sure every actor raves at some point in their career.
Well, it was very funny, because we actually showed the film in Poland at the Krakow Film Festival. And a middle-aged man came up to me at the end and he said, "Hello, I'm an actor. I'm a Polish actor. You probably don't know who I am, but I just wanted to say that this is the best King Lear I've ever seen in my life." And I don't know how serious he was, but I think he was being pretty serious. But, you know, I think he didn't mean David doing, because there's a few bits where he does lines from King Lear in the film. And I don't think he was talking about them, but I think he was meaning the whole film and David's real life.
Yes.
Showing the vulnerabilities, the strengths of getting old, showing us what it's like, and also getting ready to die. And he's actually incredibly grateful to life, isn't he, at the end, and saying, I feel so I'm in bliss. I feel so peaceful.
I'm very happy for you for having made this film, because I think it will be a film that you'll be hearing about from people for years to come. It will resonate. It resonates with people.
And, well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Really look forward to seeing a few folks down at the Lemley in Santa Monica.
And to your point, the film Much Ado About Dying will be opening at the Lemley Monica Film Center in Santa Monica this Friday, today, March 22nd. You'll be there for a Q&A for the 7:30 screening, as well as on Saturday and the 23rd for that screening at 7:30. So check this out. It's a wonderful film. I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Director Simon Chambers, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Caspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.